Acts chapter 16, picking up at verse 35, reading to the end of the chapter, reading in the New King James Version. And when it was day, the magistrate sent the officers, saying, "Let those men go." So the keeper of the prison reported these words to Paul, saying, "The magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace." But Paul said to them, "They have beaten us openly, uncondemned Romans, and have thrown us into prison. And now, do they put us out secretly? No, indeed. Let them come themselves and get us out." And the officers told these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid when they had heard that they were Romans. Then they came and pleaded with them and brought them out and asked them to depart from the city. So they went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia. And when they had seen the brethren, they encouraged them and departed. Earlier, of course, in this chapter, Paul and Silas have come to the city of Philippi, Roman colony. They have preached the word there. They converted Lydia and others outside the city. And inside the city, of course, they were also preaching and teaching the word as they had opportunity. One occasion, of course, Paul had to perform a miracle and cast a demon out of a young slave girl that caused her masters to lose financial gain. And of course, those individuals who lost the financial gain seized, along with some others, Paul and Silas, and dragged them before the magistrates, that is, the rulers of the city, and had them beaten and thrown into prison. And of course, Paul and Silas were praying around midnight, and God caused an earthquake to happen, and all the chains were loosed on the prisoners. And as a result of this, the Philippian jailer and his household was baptized. Now, when Paul and Silas were taken before the magistrates simply heard the charges made against them, but they really did not engage in a proper trial. That is, there was no guilt or innocence determined. They simply took the accusations that were made against Paul and Silas, and they assumed them to be guilty, being Jews, because the ones who took them before the magistrates prejudiced their minds by simply referring to them as Jews. And so they were beaten. They were beaten by these officers mentioned in verse 35 and following. We've referred to them as lictors. That's the Latin term for those who would lay the stripes on the back of these individuals. And so, after the Philippian jailer and his household have been baptized, having obeyed the gospel in verse 35, chapter 16, when it was day, the magistrate sent the officers, that is the lictors, saying, "Let these men go." So now, after this has occurred in the middle of the night, Paul and Silas are still in prison, even though they were released by the Philippian jailer for a period of time during the night. But now they're back inside the prison. And the magistrates have decided, well, they've suffered enough, we'll let them go. And so they send the officers, those who had beaten them, to inform the Philippian jailer to release them. Verse 36, so the keeper of the prison, that is the Philippian jailer, reported these words to Paul, saying, "The magistrates have sent to us to let you go, therefore depart and go in peace." Depart, leave the city, leave the prison, and go away in peace. But Paul said to them, "They have beaten us openly." That is, the magistrates have. Now, the magistrates did not beat them. And the magistrates commanded the officers, that is, the lictors, to beat them. So Paul, of course, is speaking of the magistrates when he says, "They have beaten us openly." That is, they've beaten us publicly. That is a public flogging that they had received. And uncondemned, Paul says, uncondemned. That is, they really did not receive a trial. They should have, before they were beaten, received a trial. And if they were guilty, they would have been beaten. But they received no trial. They were uncondemned. Not only that, he says that they were Romans. Paul and Silas were Roman citizens. Of course, they may have made that known before, but it is news to the ears of the magistrates, and so, and have thrown us into prison, and now do they put us out secretly? That is, they did all of this before, openly or in public, but now they send to send us away secretly. No, indeed, let them come themselves and get us out. So Paul is saying, let the magistrates themselves come and release us, liberate us, set us free. Now, why would Paul say that? It's because these magistrates were in the wrong. They had beaten and imprisoned Roman citizens without a proper trial. Verse 38, and the officers, that is, those who had beaten Paul and Silas, told these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid when they heard that they were Romans. Because these Roman magistrates, remember, this is a Roman colony, and these magistrates were under the administration of the Roman Senate, and they have treated Roman citizens in a way that was unlawful to be treated. Verse 39, then they came and pleaded, besought, begged with them and brought them out. That is, Paul said, let the magistrates themselves come, and evidently they did come. They responded to the demand that he made. And the magistrates asked them to depart from the city, leave the city. Now, of course, they didn't have to do that. They were Roman citizens, but I guess the magistrates think, well, this is the only way to satisfy both groups. That is, to satisfy Paul and Silas, release them, liberate them, set them free. But they still have to leave the city. It would satisfy those who thought they had been wronged by losing their gain from the slave girl with the demon being cast out. Verse 40, so they went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia. Evidently, the church was meeting in the house of Lydia. Remember, we've spoken about this before. She must have been well off. Remember, from Lydia's house, evidently, you might say it was kind of a rendezvous place for Paul and Silas and others in his party to live and stay there during the time that they would go to the riverside and preach and teach the word as well as in the city. And so the church must be meeting in the house of Lydia as well, because when they were released from prison, they entered the house of Lydia, and when they had seen the brethren, perhaps brethren were there as well with Lydia, or they might say the church was meeting there. They encouraged them and departed. So Paul and Silas left the city. You might say the Roman magistrates demanded that they leave the city, and it was the only way, I guess, to satisfy the demands of those magistrates and also to be able to continue to preach the word as they traveled. Questions or comments about Acts chapter 16? All right, Acts chapter 17. Paul and Silas continue their second evangelistic journey. Now remember, they're in Philippi, so they're going to travel. Now they're going to travel from the city of Philippi, and they're going to go southwest from the city of Philippi and travel through a couple of other cities until they come to Thessalonica. So let's read the first four verses of Acts 17. Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. Then Paul, as his custom was, went into them, and for three Sabbaths he reasoned with them from the Scriptures, explaining and demonstrating that the Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead, and saying, "This Jesus whom I preach to you is the Christ." And some of them were persuaded, and a great multitude of the devout Greeks, and not a few of the leading women, joined Paul and Silas. Acts 17, verse 1, that when they had passed through Amphipolis, they left Philippi, went to a little city called Amphipolis. It was about 32 miles away from Philippi, southwest from the city of Philippi. And then they went on about 30 more miles to Apollonia. And then they went on about 36 miles and came to Thessalonica. Thessalonica is the capital city of the Roman province of Macedonia. It is the city in which the church existed that Paul would write his first epistle to, 1 Thessalonians. Then later he would write 2 Thessalonians. So this is the city. As a matter of fact, he's going to write that epistle after he continues this journey and goes to Corinth. So when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. Now remember, in Philippi, there may have been a synagogue of the Jews, but it was outside the city, if there was one. Many people suppose there was not a synagogue of the Jews, but there were Jewish worshipers there in Philippi. It was a Roman colony, perhaps just simply filled with pagans. But in the city of Thessalonica, there is a synagogue of the Jews. And verse 2 of Acts 17, then Paul, as his custom was, went into them. As his custom was. It was his habitual manner of evangelistic efforts that he was engaged in. Wherever he would go and take the gospel to the Jews first. And so he would seek out a synagogue to do that. That was his habit. That was his habitual practice, referred to simply as a custom. Then Paul, as his custom was, went into them, and for three Sabbaths he reasoned with them from the Scriptures. Three Sabbaths. Three Sabbaths are mentioned when 3 weeks are under consideration. So a three-week period of time is under consideration. But when we look at a couple of other places in the Scripture, such as when we study 1 Thessalonians, the epistle itself, and when we study from Paul's epistle to the Philippians, we actually learn that Paul stays in Thessalonica more than 3 weeks. Could have been as much as 3 months or even longer. Here, it simply has reference to the period of time he spent in the synagogue with the Jews for three Sabbaths. But his entire period of stay in Thessalonica was much longer. Paul says in regard to the Philippians that they sent, you know, he just left Philippi. He's traveled, you might say, almost 100 miles away to Thessalonica. While Paul was in Thessalonica, when Paul writes the Philippian brethren, he reminds them about them sending him financial support, not just once, but twice while he was in Thessalonica. So he must have been there more than 3 weeks. And so the three-week period here for the three Sabbaths simply has reference to the time that he reasoned with the Jews in the synagogue. Perhaps after that, because there were some who did not believe, after that he perhaps had to do his preaching and teaching in some other location in the city of Philippi, or in the city of Thessalonica. Verse 2, Acts 17, then Paul, as his custom was, went into them, and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them from the Scriptures. That is, he would take the Scriptures. What Scriptures would Paul take? Well, in the synagogue, they would read the Old Testament Scriptures. So he reasoned with them from the Scriptures. That is, he would take his lessons from the Old Testament Scriptures and prove that Jesus Christ was a fulfillment of those Scriptures, because that's whom he preached. Verse 3, Acts 17, explaining and demonstrating that the Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead. Explaining, expounding upon the Old Testament Scriptures, and demonstrating or proving from the Old Testament Scriptures that the Christ, now remember, the Christ to these people, to the Jews, was the long-awaited Messiah who was to come. The Christ simply refers to the Anointed One. The Anointed One, when we go back to the Old Testament Scriptures, would be the Messiah who was to come, who was to be a descendant of David. And so, explaining and demonstrating that the Christ, note this, had to suffer. Suffer to the point of death, that's what's under consideration, because he did more than just suffer. He was afflicted and put to death. So that's the suffering. He suffered to the point of death and rise again. Now, rise again, had he risen before? No. Kind of a bad translation. Just rise would have been sufficient enough. The word again does not have to be there. The reason the word again is there because the literal form of the word translated rise again literally means to stand again. That's what it literally means. So in some of the translations, as the King James, New King James Version, it's got rise again, and some people have the idea, well, he must have risen before. No, he just simply rose from the dead. He didn't rise again from the dead. He simply rose from the dead, and that's what's under consideration. And so when Paul reasoned with them from the Scriptures, that is, from the Scriptures, he would take what the Scripture said and expound on it and demonstrate and prove from the Scriptures that these things had reference to Jesus of Nazareth as being the Christ. And so the next phrase begins by saying, "This Jesus whom I preach to you is the Christ." Now, there were many people called Jesus, so what Jesus is he preaching? Jesus of Nazareth, that's the Jesus under consideration. Remember, Jesus was a common name during that time period. Came from the Old Testament name Joshua. So, Jesus of Nazareth, that's the one he was speaking about, and Jesus of Nazareth was indeed the Christ, as Peter presents him in Acts chapter 2 as well. Acts 17 in verse 4, "And some of them were persuaded." Some of them were persuaded. Some of them were convinced. Some of them, let me suggest, believed and obeyed. They believed and obeyed the gospel message that Paul presented. That's the idea in the word persuaded here. They were convinced. They were convinced to believe. They were convinced and persuaded to believe and obey. That's what they did. Now, it doesn't say that, but the implication is that, as we read on in the verse, "And some of them were persuaded." And note, there's three groups going to be mentioned in this verse. "Some of them" refers to the Jews who, you know, that it was a Jewish synagogue. So some of the Jews were persuaded. They were convinced. They were convinced to believe that this Jesus of Nazareth, whom Paul and Silas was preaching, was indeed the Christ. And the belief, or them being convicted of that, of course, was an obedient belief. And some of them were persuaded. "And a great multitude of devout Greeks." Here's the second group. A great multitude. That is a large crowd. A large number. Great. "A great multitude of the devout Greeks." That is, these were Gentile proselytes who met in the synagogue. Remember, Gentile proselytes would meet with the Jews in the synagogue. Proselytes, those who've been proselyted to Judaism. That is, Gentiles had left their worship of idols and had joined with the Jews in their worship of the true and living God. Now, there were different kinds of proselytes, remember. Sometimes we talk about proselytes of righteousness, proselytes of the gate. That is, Gentiles who had given themselves up to the law of Moses, to the teaching and practice of the Jews contained in the law of Moses. Proselytes of the gate was ones who did not go as far as making themselves Jews. Proselytes of righteousness were those who would actually go as far as circumcision. They would have themselves circumcised and also keep the law of Moses. So there were devout Greeks. The Greeks are, of course, Gentiles. They were meeting in this synagogue as well. So that's the second group. And then we have a third group mentioned. "And not a few of the leading women." Not a few. Not a few means many. Many. Many of the leading women. Prominent women. Those who may have been wives of some of the leading men in the synagogue. Note what they did. All of these, the sum of the Jews, not very many, evidently. Some of the Jews, not very many. The larger majority were Gentiles, a great multitude. And then a few of the leading women. All of these three groups, they joined Paul and Silas. They joined them, that is, they shared in fellowship with them. That is, to join them is joining themselves to them. They become a part of them. They became Christians. That's what they did when they joined Paul and Silas. They left Judaism. Now they believe in Jesus of Nazareth as being the Messiah, the Son of God. So there's the belief and obedience expressed in them joining Paul and Silas. Just as Paul, remember, after his conversion went to the city of Jerusalem and tried to join himself to disciples, he tried to become a part of them. He was already a part of the universal church, but he tried to join himself to the local church in Jerusalem. And of course, they wouldn't let him until Barnabas spoke up for him. So these people joined Paul and Silas. That is, they joined themselves to them. They have fellowship with them. They're now in the family of God. They have believed and obeyed the preaching of the gospel by Paul and Silas. All right, Acts chapter 17 and verse 5. Acts 17 and verse 5. Let's read through verse 9. But the Jews, who were not persuaded, becoming envious, took some of the evil men from the marketplace, and gathering a mob, set all the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city, crying out, "These who have turned the world upside down have come here too. Jason has harbored them. And these are all acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying there is another king, Jesus." And they troubled the crowd and the rulers of the city when they heard these things. So when they had taken security from Jason and the rest, they let them go. So what happened in Philippi happens here with the preaching and teaching of the word. Of course, some people do not accept it, and so there's going to be conflict and opposition. Verse 5, but the Jews who were not persuaded, the Jews who would not believe and obey. Remember, some were persuaded. Verse 4, they believed and obeyed the gospel. But the Jews who were not persuaded, the Jews who did not believe and obey the message that Paul was preaching. Now, who are these? These are the unbelieving Jews, the ones who still wanted to hold to Judaism as a means of justification or salvation. These are the Jews under consideration. And so, becoming envious, the word envious there is actually the word for jealousy, but sometimes jealousy turns into envy. They were very jealous. That is, they see they were on fire because of why? Remember the three groups? Only some of the Jews believed, but a great multitude of the Gentiles. Here salvation is being preached to the Gentiles. There were Jews who didn't like that. Jews did not like the fact that Gentiles could be acceptable to God on the same basis that they could. Remember, we've just studied back in chapter 15, and even before that, when Peter went to the household of Cornelius, that it seemed to be settled. And after Acts chapter 15, the problem seemed to be settled, especially with the letter that was sent out, that God approved of the Gentiles just as he had the Jews. But still, everywhere Paul would go, unbelieving Jews would cause a problem. And this is the ones under consideration here. But the Jews who were not persuaded, becoming envious, note what they did. They took some of the evil men from the marketplace. Evil men are those who are wicked, those who are morally impure. They took them from the marketplace. The idea is that these evil men were just, why were they in the marketplace? Because that's the way they spent their time. Just loitering around the marketplace, causing problems, creating strife, creating contention, perhaps stealing, causing all kinds of evil and wickedness in their life to come about. And so, and note this, we've seen this again in other places in our study of the book of Acts, the Jews who were not persuaded. Now, these Jews who were not persuaded, they were still religiously minded people. They were religiously minded people that held, supposedly, to the principles taught in the Old Testament scriptures. You would have thought that they would have been godly minded people, but whom do they side with? Evil people, immoral people, wicked people. So you've got the Jews who declare themselves to be righteous, declare themselves to be godly, trying to hold to the law of Moses as a means of justification, then becoming friends, you might say, with the evil or wicked in the marketplace, because it would suit their need on this occasion. We see that so much, you know, where godly people, in order to get their way, will side with the ungodly. And that's what happens on this occasion, because the ungodly can help them get their way. So they took some of the evil men from the marketplace, note this, and gathering a mob, gathering a crowd that turns into a mob, they set all the city in an uproar. I want you to note that. They set all the city in an uproar. Now, they set all the city in an uproar. They created a havoc. They created commotion. They created chaos. They created disorder. They're a mob. Now, there's going to be several, at least three or four, synonyms for this creating an uproar in the context here. So we note that they set all the city in an uproar, all the people of the city in an uproar, and attacked the house of Jason. They assaulted the house of Jason and sought to bring them out to the people. Now, remember, Paul had spent 3 weeks in the synagogue reasoning with the Jews. Where did he go when he left the synagogue? We know from the epistle to the Thessalonians as well as the epistle to the Philippians that Paul spent more than just 3 weeks in Thessalonica. So where do you suppose Paul went when he left the synagogue? Where did he go to meet with those who were persuaded to believe and obey the gospel? All right, went from house to house. I want to suggest to you that he went to the house of Jason. Perhaps that's where the church is meeting. Because later on in the context, Jason and some brethren are going to be dragged out of this house. So why would some brethren be at Jason's house? Because that's where the brethren are meeting. You might say that's where the church meets. As a matter of fact, this mob, knowing that the church meets in Jason's house, they go to Jason's house to look for Paul and Silas and his party. But they don't find him. They set all the city in a roar and assaulted the house of Jason. Now, I don't know if your house has ever been assaulted. Perhaps not. But when you assault someone's house, you're assaulting the house in order to get to the occupants of a house. How do you assault a house? The word house is literally a house. Perhaps they kick the door in. It's a mob. It's a mob. They want to drag Paul and Silas out of that house. So they attack the house. They may have kicked the door in or whatever. They get inside the house anyway and attack the house of Jason and sought to, note this, to bring them out to the people. Sought to bring who out? Well, they're looking for Paul and Silas, we know for certain. Verse 6, Acts 17. But when they did not find them, they didn't find Paul and Silas there on that occasion. So they assault the house, they get into the house, they're looking for Paul and Silas, they don't find them. But when they did not find them, There were some in the house. Those in the house were Jason and some brethren. So they dragged Jason, literally drag him forcefully out of the house. Now, could you imagine someone coming to the church building here, assaulting the house of worship here, breaking the doors down, coming in and dragging people out? That's what happened in the first century. Not just to this place, but to many places in the first century, Christians were dragged out. So when they did not find them, they drug Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city. How many brethren? We do not know. Who they were, we do not know. Now, we're studying in the book of Romans. We're going to begin Romans 16 on Wednesday evening. We're going to read about a Jason. Now, whether that Jason mentioned in Romans 16 is the same Jason mentioned here or not, there's no way of us knowing, but there's a great possibility it is the same individual. But we're not certain. So when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city. Note the word rulers of the city. They're different kind of rulers than those who were referred to as magistrates over the city of Philippi. Two different Greek words that describes different administrators of city government, because Philippi was a Roman colony. So their administrators of city government were known by a different Greek term. Thessalonica is the capital city, but it's not a Roman colony. And so the translation of the word is simply rulers, but a different sort of rulers. They administered the affairs of city government. So they dragged some of the brethren and Jason to the rulers of the city, crying out, "These who have turned the world upside down have come here too." Now, we noted the phrase in verse 5, set all the city in an uproar. That is, set all the people of the city in an uproar. Here, they cry out, "These who have turned the world upside down have come here too." So the phrase, "turn the world upside down," is a synonym for that phrase used in verse 5. Set all the city in an uproar. Not the same Greek word, but a synonym for it. That is, they're very like in nature. So to turn the world upside down is to cause an uproar. These who have turned the world upside down, the world under consideration, is the people of the world. More literally, the people of the Roman Empire. So these who have turned the world, that is the people of the Roman Empire, upside down. How do you turn people in the Roman Empire upside down? Well, you don't literally turn people. You create disorder. You create chaos. You create commotion. It's as if you shake the people of the world. And so you create a mob. That's what they did in verse 5. These Jews, they created a mob. Chaos and contention and strife and tumult. Well, that's what they're charging Paul and Silas with. They're charging with them the same thing that they just did themselves. Have you ever known anyone to do that? We see this a lot among politicians. One politician or one party will charge another party with something, but the party doing the charging is just as guilty of that same thing as the party they're charging it with. And so that's what happens here. These unbelieving Jews, disobedient Jews, have charged Paul and Silas with doing the same thing they did with the city. Of course, Paul and Silas is charged with doing that to the people of the whole Roman Empire. But these unbelieving Jews did it to the city, the people in the city. They simply did the same thing. "These who've turned the world upside down have come here too." They've come here also. "Jason has harbored them." He's harbored them. "And these are all acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar." He's harbored them. Harbor gives the ideal of giving them a safe place to stay. But actually the word harbor here simply means he's received them. He's welcomed them. He has received them and welcomed them in the fellowship and in his home. Now, they could have been staying there and living there. The church could have been meeting there. It's not that he has harbored them, hid them, kept them safe. He has simply welcomed them and provided a place for them to stay. And these are all, no, these are all, not just Paul and Silas, but all of these brethren as well as Jason, all of these who believed and obeyed, they're all acting contrary in opposition to the decrees or ordinances or rules or laws of Caesar, saying there is another king. There was no king but Caesar. But that's what they're charging Paul and Silas with. That they're going about teaching there's another king. All right, we're out of time. Let's pick up here at verse 7. Any other questions or comments? All right, we'll pick up at verse 7 of Acts 17 next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention and good comments.